You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
Belted to left field. Billy comes through tonight. Splash.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. It has been a while, Michael Engel. I of course am your host, Jeff. And with me, of course, is I'm at a loss for adjectives.
Out of them.
I've used them all up.
I think so. If anybody wants to donate a thesaurus,
please. Send it care of Kansas City Baseball Vault. But with me, of course, my co-host, Michael Engel. And it has been a while since we have joined you. And a real good excuse, except for being an adult kind of sucks sometimes. As you probably know, I think the last show we did was right after my wedding. Well, I had a destination wedding, so I had a reception here in town this past weekend. So that took up a lot of time. And then, Mike, you had a... school has come back in session, and when you run one of the university bookstores, that means you're kind of busy. So
a little bit.
We're unable to get some time for a little while here to sit down and record, but here we are now for the all-important stretch run. We'll be coming at you, hopefully back on a normal schedule here every week for the rest of the season, and hopefully, fingers crossed, into October. But let's do a little catch-up, Mike, from where we were last time to where we are now. And here, hold on a second. I'm gonna plug in my microphone thing here, little headphone deal, so that
so it's like a professional operation.
Yeah, there we go. Does that sound better?
Probably. Yeah.
But
yeah, it sounds better.
It does?
Yeah.
All right. So now. Okay. So this is why I do it.
Yeah. Exactly.
But anyway. So anyway, since we've last spoke, I mean, they were in, which is weird because as long as the gap has been, they were in first place when we started or when we last had a show. They're in first place now, and it's not like they, you know, dove and jumped back up. They've held first place. I mean, I haven't seen a tweet about it or heard, but this has to be the longest the Royals have held first place in the division in a long time, let alone the second half of the season, you know, into September. So, I mean, it's been quite impressive. The big thing that's been, I'll call it encouraging, and you're gonna have to stick with me on this for a second, Mike, but it's encouraging to me because they had that huge run where they won, like, we went 26-8, I think it was, or something. Then they finally started to cool off, and the bats cooled off, and they had hit a bit of a skid. I think they lost 5-7, and they got swept by the Indians, and or I guess technically they haven't gotten swept yet. Because they
right,
still,
that's true.
They
that's
still
true.
Have a suspended game, but it was not a good series against the division rivals. But the bats have cooled off considerably, and yet, despite that one stretch, which even the best teams in the league have a 5-7, you know, losing 5-7 type stretch. So despite that, they've still been, you know, solidly above 500 and been, you know, putting together some wins. They've been getting. It's weird because we're engineered as Royals fans to wait and expect for the Royals to fall flat on their face. And I hate to put it that bluntly, but that's kind of the truth. And yet here we are. And every time you think the Royals are going to slip up so far this season, knock on wood here, they've come through. I mean, it's been really quite something, hasn't it?
I mean, you're exactly right that you kind of expect something to go wrong. And I remember, you know, after that big run, it seemed like that was something that was, it was going to be tough to sustain it because they were hitting well and everything else was working well. And since then, I mean, the bats have cooled off significantly. And that was a big part of the problem, you know, going back to, you know, even in that Minnesota series, they won 2 out of 3 games against Minnesota, and one of them was the Alex Gordon walk-off, or that was in Kansas City against Minnesota. One of them was the Alex Gordon walk-off, which was, you know, if they finish this thing off, that's going to be like the key point of the season probably. unless something happens in this next couple of weeks. The next day, I think they scored six in the bottom of the seventh or something, and ended up overcoming a 1-0 deficit and beat the Twins then. And then that last game of the Twins series, they were down, then they tied it. They were down, they tied it. They were down, they tied it. And then Bruce Chen came in, it blew up. And so they were in the lead, maybe one and a half. Yeah, it really did. They were in the lead for like 1.5 innings of that entire series. And so, you know, that carried into that Cleveland series where they didn't get anything going on. You know, poor situational hitting, just didn't work at all. And even then, they went to Texas. They swept that series, which was very good. And then they just came out of New York where they won 2 out of 3, where they scored 5 total runs in New York and won 2 of those games in shutout fashion.
They got outscored 6-5 and won 2 out of 3 games.
And in the 2 games they won, none of the runs were earned either. So they've won, you know, this is Monday the 8th, and the Tigers game has finished the first of the series in Detroit, and the Royals got, you know, tore up. But, you know, starting in that Texas series, they won 5 out of 6 games, and they'd scored, you know, 15 runs in 6 games. So that's ridiculous, you know, both from what their offense is putting out, but also that they're able to win at that kind of stretch. And so if you look at it from like what they should be doing from like projections, there's no way they should be where they're at. But, you know, they're a team that's built on pitching and defense. And when their pitching is very good, the bullpen is excellent, and the defense is very good, it gives them opportunities to win those really close, low scoring games. Which is kind of funny because that's about exactly what Dayton Moore said at the All-Star break. So credit to him, I guess, for believing in the script. But yeah, I mean, that puts them in Detroit now, and today Guthrie, basically everything that had worked for them fell apart because Guthrie was getting hit hard. At least according to the broadcast, I was at work, so I wasn't able to watch it. And the defense seemed to fall apart. Eric Hosmer had a couple of errors. Moustakas seemed to miss a play. There was a double play that didn't get turned. And it kept the Tigers inning going, and, you know, ended up, you know, the Hosmer errors would have ended the inning. You know, it was, seemed like a routine play from the description, from how people reacted on Twitter. So those are the kinds of things that you have to finish those off. And the Royals, to this point, they mostly have, but today they kind of got, you know, punched in the mouth. So they've got 2 more games in Detroit. If they win 1 game out of this series, you know, it gives them an opportunity to go back to Kansas City, 10 game homestand, last homestand of the year, and they'll go back in first place. You know, so this is the crunch time, and it's, you know, that's just kind of what they're going to have to do. They're going to have to find those ways to win. And if that means that they got to win 2-1 or 2-0, and, you know, all their runs score because of errors, then, well, they got to do it. So it's shaping up to be a pretty strange and interesting month, not just because, you know, it's the Royals and they're an actual honest to God playoff push, but because some of the ways they're kind of pulling these games out are kind of just remarkable.
It really is. I mean, it's you hate to try and put this label on it, but it's one of those things where, and you mentioned this in our emails that we've talked about, Mike, it feels like that movie version of a team. It's like, you know, I mean, it's remarkable. I was kind of going in just in my head back through the progression in the movie Major League, where they go from, you know, the Royals weren't as bad as that team supposedly was in the movie. But then you have, you know, at the All-Star break at one point, I remember there's a scene where the GM comes in and, you know, they're like, oh, well, they're 60-61, you know, well, it's pretty good, but, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, the Royals were, you know, 48-50, and it's like, okay, well, I mean, that's okay, but, you know, and it just, they then all of a sudden they kind of caught fire and things started working, and just for whatever reason the team clicked. And you talk about Dayton Moore believing in the script. I feel kind of weird because I almost want to praise Dayton Moore, which for those of you that listen to the show know is strongly against my character. But I almost want to praise him. But at the same time, it's kind of hard because it's like, I don't really know if Dayton Moore was exactly right about what he said so much as it just was that things have kind of worked out. He's kind of lucked into being right, if that sounds right. I mean, we've talked a lot about on this show, process versus results. And it's like when you say you want to win games and you say you're going to win games and the goal is to win games and it actually happens, you know, I mean, everyone's going to say that's what their goal is. So depending on, you know, if your process is good and you win games, then okay. But if your process is bad and you win games, then, I mean, you can't really argue too much because you're obviously winning games. But at the same time, you know, and we're not going to get into long-term stability of you know, this team being competitive in this particular show. But it is something that you kind of wonder about and why my desire to compliment Dayton Moore is tempered a little bit because, you know, I don't wonder how much of this is just lightning in a bottle. But then again, you know, they've gone on two prolific second half runs this 2 years in a row. So, I mean, you can start to say that it's a trend and they've kind of established some things. Last year, we're like, okay, it was just a fluke. You know, you can't depend on that every year. But now there's 2 years in a row. It's like next year, if they say, well, we're a second half team, well, you got to take them a little bit more seriously. But again, you know, who knows if that's what's the word I'm looking for? I'm out of it today. But
you can send that thesaurus to the...
Yes, please, to Kansas Base. But for example, like Bruce Bochy, right? He's the Giants general manager, right? Or no, Sabian, sorry.
Sabian,
right. Yeah, Brian Sabian. So, I mean, he gets a lot of criticism for how he ran the franchise and has for a long time. And then 2010, they pop up out of nowhere almost and win a World Series. And then he still kind of gets criticized. And then boom, 2012, just 2 years later, they do it again. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, is it just something where he got enough talent and was able to get enough out of his own way that he just kind of lucked into things? Or, you know, was it something where he actually kind of changed his ways and, you know, the criticism was unwarranted and it was just kind of a narrative that had progressed? And, you know, if that's what happens with Dayton Moore, if he wins two World Series in 3 years, then he can do whatever the hell he wants. And you have my word, I will never say another bad word. I will name my firstborn son Dayton. We'll put it that way.
Yeah, it's a really weird kind of situation because, I mean, this year, you know, last year they got Shields. They were in a decent position to get some things going. He really helped them. Irvin Santana helped them out. This year, it was a little bit of, you know, you have the guys that he's drafted and developed. Sal Perez has been pretty hot for a while. Lorenzo Cain is still hovering around 300 all season long, and it just seems like he's always going to fall off, and he never does. Alex Gordon's had a good year. Nori Aoki's had a really good second half. Even guys like Billy Butler in that hot stretch was carrying this team. Alex Gordon's done so many things. And so it's kind of weird that the offense has just kind of done enough. And when they hit, they have a really good chance of winning because the pitching's been so good. Shields, you know, since, you know, early July has been lights out. You know, you just look at what he did against the Yankees the other night. That's a prime example. That's the reason the Royals got him, is so that he could go to New York and shuts down the Yankees, you know, for a 1-0 win. And, you know, I mean, and he looked amazing. He looked filthy. And so that's a key part of it. But it's also Yordano Ventura has been pretty consistent all year. Jason Vargas has been pretty good with, you know, he's had some iffy starts since he came off the disabled list, but he's had some really good ones too. And Danny Duffy all year has been pretty solid as well up until, you know, the other day. We'll talk about that a little later, but, you know, his shoulder injury. But you get those top four, and you know, it's almost like you don't have to worry about who you have in the next spot. But even then, you know, with Guthrie, he's had a couple of good games against Texas. He's gone out there and given them good innings. And then if you can make this a six-inning game and you call in guys like Kelvin Herrera and Wade Davis and Greg Holland, who've given up like four runs total since the All-Star break, that's a pretty good spot to be in. And that's a, you know, that's how this has seemed to work. You know, if you look at since the Royals took over first place back on August 11th, they've only scored more than three runs like 11 times, or not in the, yeah, like 11 out of 25.
Wow. 25.
Yeah. So it's pretty crazy. And yeah. So, you know, there's, you look up and down their thing, and there's a lot of times where they score one or two runs, and some of those, they end up getting wins out of them. So, you know, I don't think that the plan was to score a bunch of, to have a bunch of two run scoring games, but it's kind of worked. And it does kind of give you this idea that, okay, maybe there is a little something weird going on here when you get things like Alex Gordon, who, you know, when they were 48 and 50, Gordon spoke up. And anybody who's followed Gordon knows that he's really not a guy who does that. So
he's not a vocal guy at all.
Right. He's not. And he said that they need to look in the mirror. And immediately after, he starts hitting everything. And then they get into this stretch where they're having trouble scoring runs, and he's hitting everything again. The walk-off home run against the Twins. There was that home run against Cleveland in the suspended game that tied it up. I mean, those are like, you know, he's getting MVP chance out in the stands. That's your star character in this little movie. And it's pretty amazing to kind of watch that happen. So it is, it's just, it feels like something's working there. I don't know what the heck that is. I mean, we've talked about intangibles and their value and stuff here and there, and, you know, to even believe that there is something like unique to it, nah, you can't really buy into that. But it's a pretty cool story. And then, you know, if you're talking long term, short term, I mean, at least the rest of this year, you know, whatever the projections said, there's like 19 games left for the Royals. Anything can happen from here on out. I mean, I really feel like they have another run in them where they start to hit. I'm hoping that today, where they kind of started to come back against Detroit, is a good sign that, you know, they had some extra base hits. They hit the ball pretty hard against Justin Verlander. Maybe that's enough to spark them. And maybe they wake up and they, you know, they get through, they win the next two games of this series. You know, if they leave Detroit with, you know, four carved off that magic number of 19, 10 games at home, you know, with, you know, 7 of 10 of those against last place teams or close to it, that's a good spot to be in. And then you get Detroit to finish off the homestand, and, you know, that's kind of the hope, is that they can get to Detroit and have another 2 out of 3 in Kansas City where they win, and you can get that magic number maybe down into single digits or something. And then I don't know. I mean, there's so many different scenarios. It's tough to really predict it, but I think at this point it looks like 91 wins is pretty safe to win the division. And you got to kind of have to count that suspended game as a loss. I think you just have to assume it because they're going to be down two.
Yeah, it was funny because there was a Tigers fan who I follow on Twitter, who follows me. If Mike is bored, Mike_is_bored. So if you're ever wanting to follow a reasonable and cool Tigers fan, give him a follow. But he asked me today, and he's like, "What's the Kansas City feeling on the Cleveland game? Because depending on how this series goes with Detroit, that game could be huge." And I was like, "Yeah, you know, I say the concern is low only because it's pretty much a loss, and the only thing that can really happen is that the delay helps the Royals, because there's no way the way that game was going, they pulled a miracle out of their butt, out of Alex Gordon's, out of his magical forearms to get that game tied up. and then after losing or after giving up two more runs the next inning, it's like, I mean, there was no way they were scoring two more runs in that game. So the only thing is, you know, within the next, it's exactly 2 weeks from today is when they're going to pick that game up. So within the next 2 weeks, if the Royals start to heat up their bats again, then, you know, maybe it's a possibility that they score two or possibly three runs in that inning and win the game. I don't know, but it's probably going to be a loss, but the only thing it can do is help that they have some time in between. So that's kind of a weird scenario. I don't know that I remember, obviously never with the Royals, but I can't even think of something anybody else where, you know, I've seen something. I remember some scenarios where you'll have a one game playoff because teams, you know, were fighting for a division or something, and they make up a rainout game or something that has importance. But I don't remember anything like this where you know, late in the season just played a, you know, an inning or something like that. It's kind of such a weird scenario.
Yeah, and they're pretty fortunate that there was an actual series remaining, because it's going to be the bottom of the inning will be played in Cleveland, which is kind of weird, but it just basically means if the Royals score, then it's, you know, they score the three, it's over. If they don't, then it's over, and then you just go play the next game. So it's a weird thing, and you still have to kind of factor it in, but you're right, it does give them at least an opportunity to like get some momentum, get some guys hitting. I think in that game Josh Willingham had his sore back, so he wasn't even available, so he's going to be available when they resume it, presumably. And so that gives them another weapon to go in.
That's kind of weird that it almost, you'd almost think that Major League Baseball would be like, okay, you only have the same 25 players available.
You do.
You know, is that okay? So then,
yeah, he was there. He was, yeah, he was, he'll be available.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So he was, because he was, he was still on the, he was, he just wasn't, quote unquote,
he wasn't in the lineup that day.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying. I was confused for a second thinking that they might,
Gotcha. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But on that note, they did expand the rosters since it is September. Yes. So they did bring up some pretty interesting and not just because, you know, they're cool names and people kind of heard about, but
not because, in the literal sense of interesting names,
but because, you know, just the people and kind of the roles that they fill. You know, they did some roster magic and stuff with, you know, sending guys down to Northwest Arkansas so that that season would end. And those guys would be able to be recalled before the 10-day requirement to call option to players back up. But I mean, they brought up, you know, Johnny Giovitella back up, who's yet to even get in the game. They brought Francisco Pena, who hasn't gotten in at bat yet. Casey Coleman, who pitched today. They did bring up Carlos Peguero, who, you know, went on a tear in Omaha, was hitting a home run every other day, pretty much. So that was cool. You know, Lane Adams, who we've talked about a bunch, got into a game. He got the call as a pinch runner. Terrence Gore came up, guy who's only played in A-ball but might be faster than Jerod Dyson. And so, and on top of all that, this year's first-round pick Brandon Finnegan came in and you know, made his major league debut by striking out Jacoby Ellsbury and Derek Jeter in New York, no less. So a lot of intrigue in that, but also because guys like Gore and Adams are really specific to be like pinch run types, which usually at this time of year, the Royals are bringing guys up to see what they can do, see how they might fit into next year. But this time it's very strategically based to get guys in who can, you know, so that you don't, you can still reserve Jerod Dyson if he's on the bench for a position where he might fit in the lineup and be able to bat. But you can still pinch run for guys like Willingham or Billy Butler or Mike Moustakas or whomever. So that's interesting to see for the first time in who knows how long, to see how that happens. Of course, the Royals had to release Bruce Chen in the process. Blake Wood and Chris Dwyer were designated for assignment. So a lot of, you know, some names that I've heard about for a long time as Royals fans. And you know, Chen just was clearly at the end of the line. The hitters were telling him he was at the end of the line. Dwyer has struggled, and he's not really a prospect anymore. Blake Wood's been hurt and up and down at different clubs, so no big losses.
Yeah, good old Blake Wood. Yeah, it's the most intriguing thing and this is something that we wanted to hit on a little bit, was the Brandon Finnegan from that name of lists. Because as Mike said, he's this year's draft pick. And I believe I saw him when he first pitched. I think it was last Saturday. And again, we're recording this on August 8th. So Saturday would have been the 6th.
Yep.
Or I'm sorry, September 8th, not August 8th. September 8th.
Yeah.
Finnegan came in. I believe they flashed it up on the screen that he was the first person or first Royals player to play in the same year they were drafted since 1993.
Yeah, that was Jeff Granger.
Yeah, that's, I knew it was Jeff something, but I couldn't remember who it was. So,
yeah.
But yeah, and that's like, that's not one of those dubious Royals records. It's just a very uncommon thing for any team, just because the jump, even from high level college baseball, which mm-hmm. is what Finnegan was playing at TCU, you know, in the College World Series. I mean, even that jump from there to Major League Baseball is just huge. So
yeah,
finding someone who can come in and kind of blow through the minors and be able to compete that year. First of all, the trick, especially in the past, was just getting them signed, because half the time it was into August before they even signed and could get in and play. And their season, especially if they were a high school player, you know, I mean, most high school players aren't going to be able to get up that quickly anyway, but even college players, you know, their season's going to be done at the end of June. So they're basically sitting around for 2 months before they actually get into the facilities and start throwing the ball around. So it's just a very rare thing, but pretty cool to see, you know, the Royals drafted somebody in a first round. They drafted him for the specific reason of being as immediate of an impact as you can have from a baseball draft pick. And that's kind of what they're getting. He came in and it was the game was more or less already lost. And I think that's kind of why they put him in there, to just see what he can do. And he flashed some really good stuff. Two strikeouts. He strikes out Derek Jeter. And did he strike out? Who was the other strikeout? Because it was Beltran, Jeter, and Teixeira that he faced, I believe, right?
That might have been the second inning, because he pitched two innings. The first inning was their nine hitter. I don't remember who it was. And then Ellsbury was the other guy he struck out.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. So, but yeah, comes in and just flashed some real good stuff. Hasn't been in since then. I thought they might get him in today, but he didn't get in today, did he? I wasn't able to check the box score before.
He did not.
Since I was at work. Yeah. So I thought maybe they'd put him in today and just give him some more work, since the game was kind of out of hand. But they didn't. But I mean, I'm pretty intrigued. I mean, I think for the long term, he's a starter, obviously, and that's what they drafted him for. But right now, he kind of has that, it kind of feels like that David Price role from the 2008 Tampa Bay Rays. And big surprise that I bring him up.
Sure. Right?
But, you know, he, same deal. He was drafted, and then he came up that year, and he didn't start, but he just had some bullpen relief and was kind of a key cog in that wheel of sending them not only to the playoffs, but then into the World Series. So hopefully Brandon Finnegan can maybe have that kind of a role again today, or, you know, for this team this year. So, I mean, what are your thoughts from what you saw?
Well, that was the only action I saw from that game. And that was the same game where Duffy went left after one pitch, and you know, they did what they could, but it ended up in a spot where Finnegan was, you know, basically in a pressure-free spot, other than it being, you know, New York and Derek Jeter weekend. But yeah, he looked really good, and he didn't look phased at all. I think he came off the field and had like tears in his eyes, though, because, you know, you open your career in New York and you strike out Derek Jeter, a Hall of Famer, you're probably going to be a little overcome with some thoughts at that point.
Yeah.
But I think he's going to, I think we're going to see him a little bit more. The idea was that they were going to bring him up, have him in some low leverage spots, but I think they're fully prepared for him to come in and be like that left-handed specialist. You know, he's got a good fastball. He's got that slider. And he's got a little changeup too, so you know he can throw that against righties and probably be effective. And so I think we're gonna see him again, and you know, maybe in bigger situations too, especially as you know they try to mix and match and find the right mix of guys who can, you know, get those key outs, and so that they don't have to use Herrera and Davis and Holland all the time for them. You know, he might be another guy in that second tier of Crow and Frazier, and maybe that's Finnegan for those guys that you can rely on to, you know, get key outs and not just, you know, soak up the innings in blowouts or, you know, lower leverage situations. So I think that's pretty cool. And I think it's just cool to get your draft pick in the game, you know, his first year. You know, I think that it happens a few times every year in baseball, but like you said, it hadn't happened in 21 years for the Royals. And so I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I think we'll kind of let this take us to our first break here, because we'll kind of lead this into something where we don't wonder if Finnegan might have a bit of a bigger role on this team with the recent developments with Danny Duffy. And you're probably already aware of what those are, but we'll go into a little bit more detail when we get back on the break or on the other side of the break. So stick with us here and we'll bring it back in and we'll talk a little bit of Danny Duffy and the Brandon Finnegan and how that relates to the Royals' overall future as we look towards September and hopefully, fingers crossed, October. So stick with us and we'll be back on the other side.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is Jamboree night. Bring your crap kick and your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. Talking to the wall. Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thank you for sticking with us through the break. And as I teased right before the break, we are going to go into talking a little bit about, we talked about Brandon Finnegan and what we saw, what we liked from him, and just the how impressive it is that a player can be drafted this year and then come up right away, more or less. But now we'll shift the discussion a little bit looking forward with possibly a bigger role than anticipated, at least as far as the Royals are concerned, for Brandon Finnegan, because Danny Duffy, so we know now as of today that it's nothing quote unquote major. And what happened was in the game on Saturday, Danny Duffy goes out there, first pitch, boom, something happens, not sure what it was. Salvador Perez went out to talk to him, called the trainers out. Trainers come out examining the shoulder, and something wasn't happening, wasn't feeling right. So they pulled him, took him out. You know, props to the Royals for not chancing it or taking anything. I feel like if it was like Felipe Paulino, they would have just, you know, given him a pat on the behind and said, keep going. But it's Duffy, and they know he's an important part of the future, so they want to keep him good to go. So they pulled him right away and said, you know, let's examine this. And so that was the game where Finnegan actually got to pitch for the first time. But then instead of going to Detroit with the team, Danny Duffy comes back to Kansas City and gets an MRI. And it came out today via multiple media sources that the result was quote unquote no structural damage. So that, but they did say there is some inflammation, and that kind of sounds like medical athlete speak for could be covering up something bigger Yeah. Or it could be, you know, just actually what it is. And, you know, no structural damage and just some inflammation. And so they're going to, he's going to miss his next start for sure. Ned Yost has already confirmed that. And Liam Hendricks will start for him, which will be Hendricks' second start this year.
Yeah.
So with that, I mean, give me your thoughts on this, Mike. What do you think about, I mean, do you think the Royals would throw a Brandon Finnegan? Now, they've already said that they're going to start Liam Hendricks, but let's say Duffy misses another start because maybe they're being precautionary because they want Duffy Reardon to go for the playoffs. And maybe this snowballs into something where Duffy's out for the rest of the year and it just, he never gets quite back. Who knows? I mean, do you think at some point, if they need to, they would throw Finnegan into the fire like that and just say, hey, you know, you've impressed us, go start a game?
It's definitely possible. I mean, he's got more talent than Liam Hendricks. And Hendricks did fine in his spot start when he filled in for Ventura and actually looked, you know, really good in that start. But, you know, thrown kind of into action, wasn't really prepared for it in New York. You know, he got roughed up a little bit, didn't really eat up probably as many innings as they wanted to. But it's also, it's September, so they have other guys who can kind of soak it up a little bit, including Finnegan. You know, I would bet they might do something like let Hendricks go through the lineup once or twice, and maybe Finnegan goes through that third time, and then you kind of see where you're at. And, you know, then you're not exposing Hendricks too much. You're not exposing Finnegan too much. And they might be able to get away with that for like two turns in the rotation if it turns out that Duffy needs more time. I mean, they're going to reevaluate in like a couple days and see where it is. And hopefully the swelling goes down. They can get a more clear picture of what exactly is going on in there. Because, I mean, I'm not a doctor, so I don't necessarily know. But I don't think inflammation always pops up just randomly. So there might be something going on there. There might be nothing. It might just be that he tweaked it a little bit and it flared up a bit. And, you know, it's going to cool down after, you know, they give him some NSAIDs and make him rest. You know, maybe that'll work. They were right when it was Ventura. You know, he had his elbow thing earlier, and then he had his back problem where there was some tightness, and they skipped him, and it was enough. There was just, you know, one missed start. And so,
and same deal with, you know, not a pitcher, but Salvador Perez with his knee. I mean, he came back and had an MRI, and everything turned out okay. He missed a game or two, and he's back in the fold and hasn't really missed a beat.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's certainly possible. And the Royals training staff has a pretty good track record as far as handling injuries. And I know Rainey's a big fan of, is it Nick Kinney?
Nick Kinney, head trainer? Yeah.
Yeah. So I know Rainey from Rainey Gisarelli is a big fan of his and what he's done. And I think was either 2011 or 2012, did they win like training staff of the year or something? I think it was one of those years.
It was one of those years where like they literally had like three players go on the DL all year. And, you know, that's crazy. You look at teams like Texas, who was just decimated by injuries this year. They had like 40 guys go on the DL. And the Royals have been still relatively healthy this year.
Yeah, the freaking Rangers set, they showed a graphic on when they played the Royals. There was one player that got in the game and was like the 67th player that they had used over the season, which was a new major league record by like 10 players. I mean, it was ridiculous. So
that is pretty crazy.
I mean, they have been just destroyed by injuries. And I mean, can you really, I can't, besides Hosmer, you know, there's not really anybody that's been out for a prolonged period of time, you know, and they'll, knock on wood, the wonders they've been able to work with Lorenzo Cain this year.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy, he's I think he's missed a couple games, you know, here and there with some more precautionary type stuff. And maybe it's just a little bit of the Royals getting used to, okay,
here's before, what he can handle.
Yeah, before he would say, hey, my hamstring's a little tight, and they'd say, go out there, and then he'd pull it. So now he says it's a little tight, and they say, okay, we'll give you 2 days, and we'll put Jerod Dyson out there. So maybe it's a little bit of, you know, kind of both, but to be able to keep someone like Lorenzo Cain healthy, who I'm a big Lorenzo Cain fan, but fact of the matter is he's had some injury problems. So if they can keep him healthy like this, I mean, that counts for a lot, because he's a valuable part of this team.
Yeah, he adds a lot. You know, like I said before, he's hitting, and, you know, he's generally I'm just amazed that he's still hitting as like he's still hitting 300. He doesn't walk a lot and he doesn't have a ton of power, but
yeah, he's like hits 300 with a 320 on base, but yeah,
but
know,
he can steal bases, and what he gives you in the outfield is just great. I mean, he's an elite defender in the outfield, and you're right, he's able to stay healthy, and that, you know, that also gives them the flexibility to do the things they want to do with, you know, keeping Aoki in the game and letting him, you know, kind of get a couple turns at bat, and then late in the game they can do their defensive switch with Jerod Dyson coming into the game. I think Kane did have one DL stint, but it was very early. But
yeah,
you know,
that's the one I was thinking. It was kind of early. I couldn't remember if he missed maybe like a game or something.
Yeah, it was very brief. It was, you know, the minimum, because I think they just wanted to be precautious with it. But I mean, that's, you know, other than Hosmer, and Hosmer was a, you know, he got a hit on the hand. So it's not like that
was kind of a freak thing.
Yeah, that's kind of a fluke thing. You can't really say, oh, okay, well, he's really straining this and that. Infante's been on the DL and he's got some shoulder issues, but that's just Infante. I don't think he can do anything from a training standpoint. I think he just needs to get to the winter to get that stuff right. Generally they've been healthy. Gordon's been healthy all year. Sal's been healthy pretty much all year. Escobar, Butler, you know, all those guys, you know, they've been available. And your starters, Shields, Vargas had the emergency appendectomy. That's, you know, another thing you can't really do as a trainer.
You can't really prevent that.
Right.
As a human being, let alone as an athletic trainer.
Yeah. So, I mean, they've been pretty blessed with a lot of good fortune in that. But a lot of that is due to, you know, the preparation of the staff and conditioning and things like that too. Yeah. So that's been a big part of them being able to go out there with the guys that they want to have every single day. And they're able to do it because their guys are healthy and in good enough shape to go and do it.
I'm going to walk this back a second here. And because I've got a question for you, since you kind of brought it up. Something that I've struggled with all season. I want your opinion on this. I feel like we've kind of talked about this a little bit, but we'll get into it again. Jerod Dyson versus Lorenzo Cain, from a strictly defensive standpoint,
mm-hmm.
Who do you want out there? We'll call it just say center field, because that's, you know, by most accounts, the most important outfield position.
In center? That's really tough, because Dyson's improved a ton. You know, from just my observations, and this is just, you know, I'm not a scout, obviously, but it seemed like in years past, he relied a lot more on just speed, and that, you know, he didn't have to worry about taking the good route, and he could rely on you just making up any of the distance. Kane, I feel, has better instincts and has a lot of the same range. So there's a lot less, like, he's always been a lot more polished, but Dyson's really worked at it, and that's a testament to him. But it's also that, you know, now there's like a, I don't know, there's a parable I've heard of a scout, and there's these two guys, and one guy looks like, you know, the perfect epitome of what a baseball player looks like. Bubba Starling, let's say. This is Bubba Starling.
As an example.
Sure. Bubba Starling, you know, perfect specimen of baseball greatness, looks exactly like you think a five-tool baseball player would look, runs down to first base in 3.9 seconds with, you know, perfect form, just looks fantastic. And then you get this other guy who, you know, he looks a little weird, but you get him going, and he still makes the same run in 3.9 seconds, but it's not perfect form, and he doesn't look like a perfect athlete. And the difference is you can teach the second guy to be faster because you can improve his form. And so that gives him the edge later on that maybe he is a little, maybe it's just a tenth of a second. And so I think Dyson has improved quite a bit. And when they bring him in, they put him in center, they put Kane in right. And, you know, maybe that's just Dyson's not used to playing right field enough. You know, the ball does come off the bat a lot differently depending on which part of the outfield you're in. You're asking me to choose between like an A-plus defender and an A-plus defender. It's tough. So I don't know if I can really make that call. I think they're both doing exactly what you want a guy to play center field to do.
Yeah, from a strictly defensive standpoint, I think most teams would be more than happy with either. That was always what was perplexing to me, though, is because, and I completely agree, actually, that I think earlier this season we kind of had a similar discussion, and my point was that I didn't think Jerod Dyson was as good defensively as Lorenzo Cain because a lot of the reasons that you're mentioning that I do believe, along with you, that he's improved on. Because I do think that was one of my biggest criticisms was not only would he not make a good jump, but sometimes he would even make the wrong jump and he'd step forward and realize he had to, you know, go back and it was going to go over his head, or he'd go left and then he had to go right because the ball was slicing and he didn't see, or something like that. And, you know, he ended up making the play because he's got so much speed and he's so, you know, quick to recover that it made up for it. But yeah, I have noticed quite a bit that he looks a lot smoother. And that was kind of the difference. Cain looked really smooth out there because he wasn't making those wrong moves at the beginning or didn't have to wait that extra split second.
Yeah.
And that has gotten a lot better. I do think I'm pretty much right on with you in terms of, I think Cain, from a natural instinct standpoint, is better, which is interesting because, you know, he didn't start playing baseball until junior year of high school.
It is pretty weird.
He theoretically could have even more cultivation of his skills, you know, just like Jerod Dyson. So, I mean, we're probably seeing the apex of Lorenzo Cain. We're probably seeing the apex of both of them in terms of upside.
Yeah, they're both,
but
you
theoretically,
know,
you could see just a little bit kind of bumping up a little bit more on that ceiling. Because that's the only thing that's perplexed me the most is why, when you have Cain and Dyson in the same outfield, why does Cain move to right field? I mean, the only thing I could think of is that they think Cain has a better arm than Dyson, and the right field to third base throw is going to be one of the harder ones to make. So you wouldn't want to put Dyson over there to have to make that throw if he's got a weaker arm, I guess. I mean,
it makes sense, but it could just be just comfort zone. You know, I mean, if Cain's more comfortable in right and they're equally comfortable in center, then, you know, that's a pretty easy shift to do there. I don't know, though. I mean, it's a nice setup. It's nice when you have Gordon, Dyson, and Cain out there because...
Man, I would love that every day, just from a defensive standpoint. They've got,
almost nothing will fall in that situation. Just they're able to cover a lot of ground. I guess the one thing that might flip it in Kane's favor for me between those two is a lot of times you'll see Dyson come up and rush on a ball, and it might like pop out of his glove, or he might, you know, it doesn't always secure it. He'll do that every now and then.
Yeah,
but I mean it doesn't happen that often anymore.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of nitpicking. But when you get to that level of defense for both those players, all you have are nitpicks.
Yeah.
So
tough to complain.
And if you want to talk about the outfield of Gordon, Dyson, and Cain, I mean, if anybody ever wants to know what's the difference when you see a pitcher with a good ERA, but then the FIP statistic, fielding independent pitching, that we've talked about, if you see a wild difference between the two, that's where it is. When you have an outfield like that, not only that good, but then, you know, the Royals have a good infield as well. You know, that's going to account for a big difference because a pitcher's BABIP is probably going to be deflated quite a bit when you've got so much speed and range in the outfield. And if you have a situation where 75% of those bloop singles that might normally, maybe 50% of bloop singles that would normally fall for an average baseball team are being caught because you've got Dyson and Cain and Gordon patrolling that outfield, and it's going to make your stats look a lot better. So,
yep.
You know, that's obviously that's an oversimplification, but if you ever look at, you know, earlier in the season, I think they've kind of evened out, but earlier in the season, Danny Duffy's stats were kind of a pretty big split like that, where his ERA was looking really good, but his other peripheral numbers weren't that great. And that was part of it, was because the defense is so good. It's really helping. And you look at Vargas and Guthrie, and I mean, they're getting that bump too.
Yeah.
And it's evened out a little bit for Duffy, which is very encouraging because he continues to have the solid numbers anyway, just because, wow, he's having a great season. But But yeah, just to kind of illustrate a point, that's how big of a difference it can make to have an outfield like that.
Yeah, and when you look at it from, you know, teams that have a guy in the outfield who's not usually out there, or is, you know, that guy that you park in left because you can't find anywhere else for him, that gives the Royals a pretty good advantage in there, especially when it's guys who can contribute on offense. And, you know, good example is today's game where Don Kelly was playing center field. I think it was Don Kelly was playing center field and ran into Torrey Hunter on a ball that was hit by Lorenzo Cain, and the ball got away and Cain circled the bases. You know, that guy's not used to playing in the outfield, and certainly not someone you'd consider a great defender out there. And that, you know, that made a difference on that one play. So, you know, I think it's all important. And also, especially with what the Royals did, I think they recognized that their park and outfield defense would allow them to go on, you know, go after guys like Vargas and, you know, take more chances on Guthrie, and, you know, probably gave them some good faith in Danny Duffy too, who's a big fly ball pitcher. And so, you know, if those guys are playing to that strength, then yeah, you maybe let them put the ball in the air a little bit more, knowing that your guys are going to track it down.
Yeah, it's definitely been something special to watch. And I mean, I haven't crunched the numbers or anything, but if you had to put a number on it, how many wins do you think that the defense alone has given this team? 10 wins, maybe?
I mean, there would be, I haven't looked at it statistically, but I mean, there would be a number of those where, yeah, 10 wins, you know, you get an out instead of prolonging an inning. You're able to, you know, finish an inning faster, so that's less pitches for your starter. So that's less pitches that your bullpen has to cover. I could see it adding up to that. And especially with, you know, this outfield, I mean, last I had really looked at it, all three of the guys we've talked about are like in the top five in defensive runs saved in all of baseball. So they're doing pretty remarkable things. So I would say, I mean, that's definitely, that's one way how you can get the projections to undersell you, and how you can go through and win these 3-2 and 2-1 games is by, you know, the defense saving that one run, you know, Alex Gordon saving a base and keeping a guy from getting into scoring position. And you just end up in a position where it helps your team so much. And it's definitely their biggest advantage probably, right? Well, that in the bullpen, which is pretty crazy too.
Yeah. And so after we've kind of, that kind of expounded into a few different tangents, but sure. That's what we do.
What else would
that's
you expect?
That's what we do on this show. but to get back to kind of our central thesis of where all that came from, looking forward with the Royals, let's start talking about that, Mike. So after today, there's 21 games left. So, 22? Well, 21.
You're in that. Yeah.
Well, let's see. Because they're 79 and 63. So that's 142 games.
Minus the Cleveland game, and they lost today. So.
Well, that's because I'm looking at Baseball Reference. They're 79 and 62. So I think that's without today's game, which would make them 79 and 63.
They were 79 and 63 at the start of the day.
Oh, they were? Okay. So this must. Baseball Reference must not have updated yesterday.
They don't update until, I don't know. They update weird.
Okay, so 79-64.
Yeah.
So that's 143 games.
Yep.
Plus the one inning is 144. So they've got 18 games left.
Yeah.
In this season. And I got their schedule pulled up. So we're going to kind of just do a quick little rundown of who they've got left in these final final games here. So they've got two more against Detroit at Detroit, and they have come back for a 10-game homestand where they've got four against Boston, three against Chicago, and they finish up the homestand, last homestand of the season, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The K better be packed, by the way. And I'm not one to call out the fans. I was defending the fans when they had the little kerfuffle earlier in the season.
That's a good word.
Somebody sent that thesaurus and during the break. Can you believe it? But when that was going on earlier, I was defending the fans, and I wouldn't call them out if they didn't fill it up. But I mean, how can you not want to go out to that game that the season could very well be on the line? I mean, you got the playoffs, division, wild card, everything. But that'll be the last home game or home series of the year. And then they go on the road to finish out the year with 3 at Cleveland and then 4 at Chicago to finish it out. So
yeah.
Given that rundown, Mike, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, it's so tough. Like they're up against Scherzer tomorrow and Porcello on Wednesday. You know, I really want them to win one of those games. I feel like, you know, it's tough to beat any team 3 times in a row. So I think that bodes well for the Royals against Detroit because, you know, just improves their odds that they're going to get the one win, be able to go in on Thursday in first place. And, you know, if you can do that with 10 games remaining against, you know, the Red Sox and the White Sox, neither team is really any part of any chase of any kind anymore. The Red Sox have traded off a bunch of guys, called up a bunch of guys. The White Sox have kind of been, you know, just there all season. That's an opportunity right there. 7 games there, you can win 5 of those. You know, so if they win just one in Detroit, if they win tomorrow but don't win on Wednesday or something, or the other way around, whatever, you know, that's 6 wins there. So that puts them at, what, 85? Then you get Detroit in that final homestand. Let's say you can win 2 of those and you split the 6 games in September against them. Well, I mean, that gets them to 87 wins. So now you've got 7 games against Cleveland, who by that point is probably going to be wiped out of it. They've kind of been stubborn. But
yeah, or one of those things where they'll be 5 back with 7 to play where –
the same kind of spot the Royals were in last year.
Yeah,
where it's like, yeah, they're technically in it, but they're not really in
it. And that's probably best case scenario for them at this point.
Yeah, because, I mean, Cleveland's really annoying, but yeah. Anyway.
Yes, in more ways than one. But
right, well, yeah. but, I mean, then if you're at 85, 86 wins going into that last 7 games, you got to feel pretty good about winning, you know, 4 games there to get to 91 wins. And, I mean, I think it's definitely doable. I think it's definitely within reach. And that's just if they continue kind of doing what they've been doing, where they're getting through games with their pitching and defense. Now, it does get a little complicated with Duffy. He might get, I don't know, if he's able to come back, he might get 1 start left. So that's something to kind of consider. But I don't know. I mean, they could also just completely tank. You know, that offense has been so rough. I think earlier in May, and I had this earlier, I tweeted it earlier, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but they were like 3-10 over a 13-game stretch in May this year where they scored 35 runs. But they're in the last, like, before today at least, in the previous 13 games, they were 7-6 and it only scored 33. You know, so it's so strange how you can get away with it sometimes and not others. So, but I mean, they definitely got to score some runs. And like I said earlier, I hope that this game against Detroit kind of woke them up a little bit because that's what they really need to do. Butler hasn't been hitting very well. Hosmer came back, wasn't hitting very well until today. Infante's been pretty miserable. Moustakas hasn't been bad all year. So they really need those guys to come through, you know, or switch it up. I mean, it's too bad that Christian Colon got hurt. That's another guy I guess we hadn't brought up in the injury talk. You know, another kind of freakish thing where, you know, he fractured his finger fielding the grounder in a game. And just like, okay, he can still probably pinch run, but that's about it. So that's – you know, that could be a good option to give Infante a day off because Colon had been playing pretty well. And now they go to Giovatella, and we all know how much faith they have in Giovatella. So they're not going to send off their long-term second baseman in the middle of September in a pennant race for a guy that they couldn't even get to start over Chris Getz. So that would seem strange. So they got to hit, though. You know, that's what it comes down to. They got to hit the ball. I think they have an opportunity to do that, but they've really got to do it. I mean, Detroit's got a rough-ish schedule. They get the Twins still, I think.
I just pulled up Detroit's schedule.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've got the final two against the Royals, which that's tough for them. Weird to kind of look at somebody else's schedule and see the Royals and say it's a tough game. But they got three against Cleveland, and Cleveland will be further out, hopefully, when the Royals play them.
But still dangerous.
But still dangerous. But they're going to be a lot closer now, you know, next week when they play Detroit. So especially if the Royals take I'm looking at the schedule and it says KCR, so I see the K. But anyway, if the Royals, you know, can win one or two games here, especially if they win two. But
yeah, if they win two, you feel a lot better.
Yeah, but if they win one game, you know, and then they still have a one-game lead on the division, and Cleveland's probably, you know, maybe they're two games back of Detroit, maybe three games. I'm not sure how many games back they are of Detroit right now.
Yeah,
they might. I think they're like three games back now, so maybe they're three or four games back. But then they go in with the motivation of, hey, if we can somehow sweep this series, then all of a sudden we're back in play. And they kind of beat up on each other a little bit, but then you got to hope that the Royals take care of business against Boston, because otherwise it's all moot point. And then instead of just the Tigers, then you got Cleveland, who's going to be fighting for something when you're playing them. But then they've got Minnesota and the Royals on the road, and then they kind of the reverse of the Royals, where they finish at home with seven games, three against Chicago, who's probably going to be out of it just like they will against the Royals, and then four against Minnesota, who's already out of it. You know, well, I mean, Chicago's already out of it too, really. But
yeah,
so both teams are going to be well out of it when the Tigers play them. So, I mean,
it's there's a lot to it, and it really makes it, like, if they can win the next two games, they've got Vargas, they've got Shields pitching against Detroit. If they can win two of those games here in Detroit, that's huge, because you go back to KC not just in first place, but with a three-game lead.
Yes.
So a magic number of 15. You know, if the Royals win six out of seven there, well, then your magic number is nine. You can't assume that Detroit's going to win all those games. So that, you know, if they lose three, then it's, you know, you get to a point where you could have Detroit at the end of that homestand, where a sweep would take them out. And I don't think that would happen, but I think it's mathematically possible to do it that way, you know. But you got to win two here. You got to win, you know, like six out of seven at home. Detroit's got to lose a few games, and then you get to that point where, you know, get Detroit, beat them on your own turf
if we want to talk about the Royals season here truly becoming a movie, here's where it would happen. Okay. So whatever they would do to Detroit, whether it ends up being having to sweep them or win two out of three, to where the magic number is, let's say one, right?
Yeah.
And then the Royals go to Cleveland, and before they even play the first game, they finish a half inning and they somehow pull out a victory on that half inning and clinch the playoffs with that game. I mean, could you imagine?
Well, like, a game that's technically not even on the schedule.
Yeah, and, you know, if not for a literal act of God, would have been easy loss for the Royals, easy win for the Indians, and then boom, they come back and win. And I said this will be this is a season of destiny if the Royals end up winning that game. But how insane would that be?
Well, that would be a walk-off win on a road trip. To clinch, that would be crazy.
Yeah, and I don't even know who's up to. I don't even know who they have up to bat. I'm sure
it's Moose, Escobar, and someone.
Ugh.
So I don't really know. But Cleveland's all of their Like Cody Allen was out. He gave up the homer to Gordon. So he's either it's a closer, he's gone. I don't remember who else they had available, but that would be something. That would be that crazy.
I would tell my children and grandchildren forever for the rest of my life about that. Be like, I was at that game, but not really at the game.
Right. That would be so strange.
Yeah. I'm wondering too, do you think they're going to let Cleveland fans in that game? Because like, if you're the Royals as the quote unquote home team, even though it's in Cleveland, I mean, it wouldn't really be fair if Cleveland's fans were in there, you know, making noise for Cleveland. Right. I've kind of wondered about that because it's, you know, I mean, this is really kind of pushing it the way they're doing it anyway. So you'd want to make it as equitable as possible. You know, it seems kind of
work it. Cause I don't even know like what time they're going to do that half inning. Or if they're going to like do it and then half an hour later do the actual game that's scheduled or what. I don't really know, but I'm guessing they'll let them in, but
if I'm being honest, then if I was a Cleveland fan and they did not let me in to that inning, I would be pissed. But then again, at the same time, you know, how do you handle the ticket situation? Do you just say, well, anybody who has tickets for the actual game can get into the extra inning? Because those tickets are ours. You know, like I have the ticket to that game. So
yeah,
that's another thing to consider. Like, I just don't know that I've ever remember a scenario like this with a game that was not only was it picked up, you know, weeks later, but in the opposing stadium. So,
well, it's not like they have double sales on the tickets, so I guess that's not going to be an issue.
Yeah, and it is only a half inning, so it's not like it's, you know, the seventh inning and where, you know, it's a legitimate, like maybe might even be an hour worth of game time.
And if it's Moustakas up at the plate, well, that's probably...
It very well could be three pitches.
That's a couple pitches.
Moustakas, Escobar, and, you know, Dyson maybe. I don't know who was in at the time. I can't remember, but I mean, you're looking at a possible three pitch inning there. So it could all be for nothing, but it's right. Interesting to think about.
Yep. And that'd be crazy. Yeah. I don't know. It's just, they just got to win. They got to win one in Detroit. You know, if they lose, if they go back to Kansas City, a game down, that'll be tough. And it brings up the question of like this team who, you know, last year you got a taste of it, but Detroit's been, you know, into the playoffs, deep into the playoffs, into the World Series, even with a lot of the same guys who are on the team now. I mean, they've been here before, and as much as I like to try to like dance around intangibles, that does make a difference because the team has not been in this situation before.
Yeah,
and I don't know if they're pressing or if they're tired or what, but I mean, there's a lot of different factors that could be in play. But it could be something where if they do lose that lead, they might not be able to get it back. I mean, I guess they do have the wild card to fall back on, which is fortunate. But at the same time, it's like, you know, you really want to win the division and give yourself an opportunity for some wiggle room in case there is a bad start and you're not one and done.
Yeah, I mean, and they, you know, they had to fight off the Cleveland last year to maintain the division crown, and they were kind of similar. I can't remember who was with them in 2012 when they made the World Series, but I mean, down the stretch, you know, it was. I'm looking at their schedule now, and they were down to, you know, as of September 23rd, they were a game, you know, just only a game up, or no, they were a game behind. Whoever was leading the division at the time, and then
encouraging,
yeah, and then ended up tying up. So I mean, just to echo your point though, that you know it's something where they need to. I mean, they have the experience, so that is not, it's not nothing. Put it that way.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be their first time coming back and holding somebody off down the stretch. So the Royals have to take care of business. I mean, there's no more excuses. And I said it on Twitter today before the game. This is it. This series, and I'll probably say the same thing in 10 days when they play Detroit again. But this is what 8 years of Dayton Moore and his regime has been working for this. Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, all those draft picks, all that time in the minors, all that development, it's all for this. The James Shields trade, it is for this. So there's no more excuses anymore. You traded one of the brightest prospects in Major League Baseball, if not the brightest at the time, for two pitchers to help you get to right here. Not only help you get here, but then move past it. So there's no excuses. You know, people talked about, well, is the Will Myers trade, James Shields trade, is it a failure if they don't make the playoffs? And then is this year, just based on how it's gone now, does it become a failure if they don't make the playoffs? And I say the answer to both questions is yes. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, James Shields is gone, and there's a good chance that they try and do something to deal Wade Davis too, because he's going to be expensive for a reliever. As good as he is, he's going to be expensive, and so is Greg Holland. So you're going to have a lot of money in that bullpen there. So there could be a move to get rid of Wade Davis in the offseason too, and they have nothing to show for the trade if they don't make the playoffs. So, I mean, this is it right here. It's what they came for, and no excuses anymore. They got to make this happen. That's all there is to it.
They really do. I mean, at this point, it's the middle of September. They're in first place. They've got a big homestand coming up. They have to do it. Yeah, they have to do it. And, you know, they're going to have to hit. And their starting pitching's got to be better than it has been. Their defense has to be what it's been most of the year. This week of September, they kind of kicked the ball around a little bit. And, you know, not just Hosmer today, but just other examples and other moments where they made that mistake. So, you know, they got to shore that stuff up. You know, Greg Holland's had some tricep problems, but I think he's going to be okay though.
We talked about this on the email chain. I think they're kind of slow playing it a bit.
Yeah. I mean, it's a possibility to give him some time off where they don't have to push him. So that's fine. And you've got Davis and Herrera and guys who can easily go out there and, you know, give you an inning of dominant baseball. So I don't think they're too worried about that. But guys like Butler's got to step it up. Willingham, when he's in there, he's got to bring the power that they expected from him. Moustakas has to do anything. You know, Perez has to be better. It'd be nice if they would drop Infante down in the order, but I don't think it's ever going to happen. But they got to do whatever they can to make it work and get, you know, some runs on the board. And hopefully, you know, Detroit's bullpen gives them that opportunity. They got some runs off Scherzer in the past. Purcello hasn't been great. His last start was that one in San Francisco where he got shelled pretty early. So, you know, maybe that's an opportunity there. And then you take some offensive momentum, you run through and you have a good homestand and, you know, put yourself in a position where, you know, you've got a couple of games where you don't have to be perfect. You've got some games where you can, you know, watch the scoreboard, see if Detroit loses, you know, go out there and win your game, but it's not every day is not an absolute pressure must win. It's, you know, you still want to win, but if you lose, you've still got opportunity for Detroit to lose and knock the magic number down to zero. So that's a lot of stuff happening. Yep. It's new territory. I don't really know what. It's tough. It's tough to be a fan because it's like at this point, like today was nerve wracking. Tomorrow is going to be nerve wracking. Wednesday is going to be nerve wracking. And then depending on that, you know, what happens there, it's, you know, I don't think it's going to let up anytime unless something really bad happens. And then you have no reason to be nervous because it's done.
Yeah.
Certainly don't want that.
No. So with that, I think we've covered everything we want to talk about. It was kind of a little bit longer because we had such a long break, but down the stretch, the Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right there with you. We're going to have – I don't see any reason why we wouldn't have a show every week from here on out. So put it back in the queue. And hopefully next week we'll be talking about a 3 or 4 game lead in the division. Make me feel really good. Maybe the Royals can rip off 2 wins in a row here. I don't know. But with that, we'll leave you tonight. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. And for Michael Engel and myself, Jeff Herr, We're going to let you go. Thanks for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.